If they are people,
Philby said, meaning it as a joke. No one laughed.
Any advice?
Finn asked. Don't underestimate their power over you, Maybeck said. You don't want to look into their eyes. I remember looking into a pair of eyes. The cold got much more intense.
So, try to think of other things, or what?
Finn asked. Yeah, they definitely put thoughts in your head, which feel like your own ideas. But they aren't your ideas at all. They're like orders. We ought to go through that door with our minds already occupied, Maybeck suggested. If we go through it all.
Occupied with what?
Philby asked. Maybeck answered. What's the ugliest, weirdest monster you've ever seen? In a movie, in your imagination, in your sleep. Try that. And don't let go of it. Fight fire with fire, he added. Jez is so nice. It's hard to see her as dangerous. That's when you start losing power, when the cold really gets going.
And you couldn't have told us this before we decided to come in here?
Philby asked, annoyed. I didn't remember any of this. Swear I didn't. Not until just now. But man, I'm telling you, it's all coming back in a big way.
Are we all set?
Finn asked. The boys nodded. Finn led the way through the door, his feet feeling the way in front of him. The darkness gave way to a descending stone staircase. Partway down, the stairs turned left, and a dim electric light shone overhead. More lights up ahead. The stagnant, musty air grew quickly cool. The walls dripped, and green slime ran down them like thick paint. The boys sloshed through several shallow puddles. Finn followed two sets of wet shoe prints now, from puddle to puddle. All at once, the space opened into a square room. The stone ceiling was supported by four enormous stone pillars, each with a different animal head carved onto it. The carvings were of ghoulish, evil faces, half-animal, half-human, hideous, with bug eyes and tongues sticking out. Stone benches ran along the walls. This was some kind of gathering place. The air felt even colder now. Finn counted three dark doorways leading from the room. Jez and the woman could have gone through any one of them. Philby dropped to one knee, looking for wet prints to follow. He crawled forward on his hands and knees and ended facing the middle of the three doorways. He pointed silently. Finn nodded. The boys entered a dank, narrow tunnel, with walls close enough to touch on both sides at the same time. It grew ever gloomier. There was barely any light. A suffocating staleness hung in the air. Finn towed his way carefully ahead, encountering yet another short flight of stone steps. A single bare bulb lit the place where the tight passageway ended at a second, vast, open space, a room carved from sandstone. A half-dozen columns, all connected by carved arches, rose like tree trunks from the floor. It reminded Finn of Escher's keep. It was almost as if Escher himself had once been here. Many similar patterns and designs adorned the room. Had Walt Disney once shown this room to the great artist? Maybeck crossed his arms tightly.
Temperature alert, he whispered. Arctic air mass.
It was an unnatural cold. A far too familiar cold. They were drawing closer to the source. Philby in the lead led them to the right. Noticing that the chill was reduced here, they reversed directions, following the cold like a bloodhound follows a scent. A tremor of terror ran through Finn. What were they thinking in coming here? A spiral staircase that looked like a hermit crab's shell rose to his left. Another set of narrow stone steps descended straight ahead. This place was a labyrinth. But more strangely, it was also a forced perspective hallway. The deeper they penetrated into the room, the lower the ceiling. The effect made the room appear much longer than it actually was. Finn, no giant himself, ducked as the moist sandstone caught his hair. Spiderwebs stuck to his face. He clawed at them. The boys heard hushed voices to their right. They changed direction, hunched, and stooped by the sloped ceiling.
Valor is such a dangerous thing.
The same voice from the teepee. Maleficent. The boys stopped and turned in unison. She stood alongside a column. She'd hidden behind it. They'd walked right past her.
Like bees to sugar water,
she said. She now blocked the return route. She said,
if you didn't care so much about your two girlfriends up there, you wouldn't have followed us down here. And if you didn't follow us, then how would we ever get you to give us the pen?
They'd been tricked. Jez and Maleficent had wanted to be followed. Maybeck made a quick move to his left, but with a simple wave of her gloved hand, Maleficent threw up a series of white vibrating lines that connected one column to the next. a cage of light. The lines hummed and sparked with electricity. They added light to the gloominess. A second wave of her hands erected more lines, intricately connected. She had created a complex fence around the boys. She said,
"You're familiar with shock collars for dogs. Wireless fences? Same concept. I don't advise testing it, but be my guests if you must."
The light allowed Finn to see the purple of her robes. Too scared to talk, he summoned his courage, refusing to look directly at her while at the same time keeping a monstrous image in his mind's eye.
"We know you have it on you," she said. "You clever child. Now, place the pen down on the floor. As soon as you do, your girlfriends will feel fine."
Silence. Not even Maybeck responded with his usual sarcasm. Philby's eyes danced toward the sparkling white lines that caged them. Finn could feel him plotting escape. Finn felt it was worth a lie.
"It might help if I knew what you were talking about."
"You insolent young man."
"We were there. One man's dream."
Jez stepped out from behind another column.
"One witch's dream, too," Maleficent said. "These parks grow so claustrophobic, don't you think?"
Seeing these two side by side, Finn realized how different they looked. It was hard to believe Jez was this woman's daughter, and now he felt awful for doubting Amanda. Now she sat semi-conscious somewhere above them.
"You two can go,"
Maleficent said to Philby and Maybeck. She swept her hand to one side and the fence sputtered and vanished.
"Omnia haec obliviscantur,"
she chanted musically, then said,
"When you reach the surface, you will remember none of what has gone on here, neither the events nor the way down. All you will recall is going to the restroom together. You don't know where Finn is. Haven't seen him in a while. Now, go!"
The two boys remained rooted firmly in place.
"No, why?"
Philby said.
"Silly, silly boy."
She clapped her gloved hands together. Philby seemed to lose every bone in his body. He fell to the floor in a heap of unwilling limbs and muscle, a lump of flesh.
"I'm giving you a very generous opportunity here. Terry knows better than to disobey, don't you, Terry?"
Maybeck's lips moved, but no sound came out.
"I can add some pain, if you like," she said to Philby.
"No!"
Maybeck said, reaching for Philby.
"Go!"
Finn instructed them. They looked pained to hear this from him.
"Go!"
he repeated. Losing her patience, Maleficent asked,
"Or do you prefer fire?"
Her left hand suddenly held a ball of flame. She blew it out.
"Or wind?"
The room swirled with a gale force that blew dust into their eyes and knocked the boys off their feet. Neither Jez's robes nor her mother's so much as fluttered.
"Want to play some more?"
she asked. Maleficent lit another ball of flame in her hand. She blew on it, sending it rolling directly for Maybeck. It exploded in a puff of black smoke just before reaching him. Helping Philby up, Finn leaned in and whispered,
"Keep an image in your head. Focus on something. Protect your memory."
He gave him a little shove.
"Now go!"
he said more loudly. Maybeck led Philby by the arm. They hurried out of the room. When they were gone, Finn said to the witch,
"You're head of the overtakers."
She cackled an edgy laugh.
"Me? Head? False compliments will get you nowhere with me, young man. I am but a humble servant to she who lives within. My powers are so small and insignificant. Do not waste your breath. I'm an errand runner. That's all."
Finn felt his knees go weak. There was something more powerful than she was? She instructed him,
"Now, put it on the floor. Do so or suffer. Your choice."
"Make me," Finn said.
Maleficent waved her right hand and Finn's cape blew open. The assortment of pens and pencils taken from Walt's desk stuck out from the cape's inside pocket. The witch turned away and the cape fell shut. If you could make me hand it over, you would have, he told her. But you can't. For some reason, you need me to cooperate.
Why is that?
He flashed open the cape again, and again she averted her gaze.
He protected against this, didn't he? Walt Disney,
Finn said as he concealed the pens and pencils again. Maleficent dared to venture a look at the pens, her eyes sparkling, as if Finn were holding $1 million in gold. He took hold of the pens and held them out toward her. Maleficent cowered away from him.
Interesting, Finn said. You need one of these pens or pencils, don't you? But which one?
He stepped forward. She moved back and away, ducking behind the nearest column.
The real quill can hurt you, can't it? Dull your powers.
He understood then. This was how Wayne could stop the overtakers.
It can stop your plans. This pen, can't it? You need to get rid of it. Destroy it. Even just its existence has threatened you all these years.
What do you know? You're just a boy. And we all know little boys shouldn't play with fire.
With that, she pretended she was bowling. A large ball of fire rolled from her hand and across the floor at Finn. He dodged it easily enough, but then came a second and a third. Jez caught the balls of fire on the opposite side and bowled them back toward Maleficent. Finn, trapped in the middle, danced to avoid the flames. A ball singed his cape. He couldn't keep this up for long. He found himself hopping around like an Irish step dancer.
You will do exactly as I say,
Maleficent instructed him, still bowling her fireballs at him. Finn understood what he had to do. Dodging the fire as he landed, he scattered several of the pens across the stone floor. A ball of fire tumbled toward the pens.
No!
The witch shouted. With a wave of her hand, the flaming balls vanished into wisps of black smoke and the tangy smell that follows a lightning storm. So, Finn thought, she doesn't want to destroy the pen, and she can't touch it herself. She has a use for it, but is also afraid of its power.
You think yourself so clever,
she called out angrily. She walked right through his electric cage, straight for the pens. Finn dove across the floor, swept them up into his hand, and sprinted for the white sparkling fence. She had passed through without so much as a spark. When he was crossed over, Finn had been able to walk through walls and counter the currents of Splash Mountain by concentrating on the DHI essence of his crossed-over body. So why not pass through this electric fence unharmed? He focused on the single idea. I am light. I am nothing but light. Nothing can stop me if I'm nothing but light. Nothing can harm me if I'm...
Wham!
Reaching the fence at full stride, he was knocked back off his feet and onto the floor. He felt as if he'd been stabbed in the chest. Maleficent seemed to float, not walk, as she approached. She towered over him. Scowling, the witch raised her arm, about to deliver a spell. Finn clutched the pens and jumped toward her, lightning fast. He thrust the pens in her face. Sparks flew as the pens connected with Maleficent. She flew back and fell to the stone floor.
Your Grace!
Jez called out. The witch lay on the stone floor, stunned. The electric fence sputtered. Finn stepped closer to the fallen witch, the pens held in front of him like a sword. She recoiled, expecting him to strike again.
Lower the fence!
He instructed Jez. He never took his eyes off Maleficent. She seemed to be gaining her strength back.
Lower the fence, or I'll do it again!
Finn warned. The bars of buzzing white lines sparked twice more and then vanished.
Release Amanda and Charlene,
he told her. When Jez hesitated, he stepped closer to Maleficent. The feeling of cold increased. Her strength was indeed returning. He needed Jez to do this quickly before her mother came to her senses. He stabbed at Maleficent with a fistful of pens. A second burst of sparks threw her down again.
Okay,
Jez exclaimed. She waved her hands.
It's done.
Finn backed up and reached the stairway. A weakened Maleficent lifted her head and said,
We will meet again, young man. We have unfinished business, you and I.
Finn turned and ran. 31. The kids needed the plans that had been stolen from Finn at One Man's Dream, and no one had any doubts as to who had taken them. Maleficent would return for the pen, the stonecutter's quill, with a vengeance. Whatever powers the pen and the plans possessed when combined, each side had their reasons for wanting what the other now possessed. Before he left Mickey's not-so-scary Halloween party, Finn paid Wayne a visit to explain the night's events.
It's always such a noisy night, Wayne complained.
He looked silly, dressed in a pair of pajamas and a plaid robe. He wore Mickey and Minnie Mouse fuzzy slippers.
We need your help.
So it would seem. So it would seem.
Wayne paced his small apartment over the fire station, glancing out the windows occasionally. Finn heard him mutter,
"When will they go home?"
Then he paced some more.
"Two birds with one stone," he said,
now addressing Finn.
"How's that?"
Finn asked, impatient to hook back up with his friends and leave the park.
"I can help you. We'll help you. But it won't come without additional risk to us all. She has to be desperate to be bowling fire at your feet, revealing herself like that."
He studied the pens spread out on the small dining table where Finn had put them.
"You'll keep all of these, because they've obviously come in handy. Tomorrow's the day. They'll be expecting you by night, of course, because that's when you're usually here. So it can't be night. It must be day. Furthermore, if you're to secure the plans, then you must be a boy, not crossed over."
"But we can touch and hold things when we're crossed over. I can get those plans back."
"You can't do that where I'm sending you,"
Wayne countered.
"You'll have to be yourself, the others as well, and you'll need disguises, or you'll get caught."
Wayne paused, thinking hard.
"Cast member costumes, you understand? Employees, each of you. I can help there as well."
"But why? Where are you sending us?"
"You showed me,"
Wayne said.
"I might have never figured this out by myself."
"Showed you what?"
"Where's the one place that a weakened Maleficent can hide without being questioned?"
"Here in the park?"
"I mean, where in the park?"
"Whatever ride, whatever attraction she's part of."
"But that's the point. She isn't part of one,"
Wayne answered.
"Her role is over at the studios. She's in Fantasmics. That's all she does here. That one show. She turns herself into the dragon. Maybe in real life as well."
"I don't understand."
"I'm an old man talking to himself, that's all. Back to the important question. Where can she hide in the Magic Kingdom?"
"Out in the open," Finn guessed.
"Precisely. And if I were her, if I'd stolen these plans, and then led boys down to my secret lair, I would need someplace new to lay low. The boys might tell people about the dungeons. They could be searched. I could be caught. I need a place no one can find me."
"But where?"
Finn asked, feeling as if they were talking in circles.
"We'll need all five of you to dress as cast members. You'll meet me at the transportation and ticket center, bus stop number 5, at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Can you make that?"
"Tomorrow's Sunday. Probably. I suppose so."
"Make sure you do,"
he advised.
"What do you mean by two birds with one stone?"
"We're going to use our own tactics against her. If you manage to get the plans, she'll come after you. She'll want to stop you from getting them to me, especially now that she knows you have the pen."
"So?"
"You're going to lead her into a trap."
His old eyes brightened.
"You're going to use us as bait?"
Wayne looked at Finn. His features softened.
"How terribly impolite of me. It has been so long, you see. We're so close now. So very close."
He straightened up and looked Finn in the eyes.
"I need your help. Yours and the others, in catching Maleficent. It is a task not without risk, but one I assure you well worth the effort, if you're game. This is, I believe, what Walt had intended all along, the capture of an overtaker, the beginning of the end for them."
He paused and allowed Finn to think through his proposal. Then he asked,
"So, will you help me?"
At 9 the next morning, Finn stood with the others in line at bus stop number 5 at the transportation and ticket center. A large bus pulled up, the door swung open, and from behind the wheel, Wayne motioned them inside.
"Well?"
the old guy said.
"Hurry it up!"
The kids piled on, and Wayne shut the door and drove off. They were all alone in the otherwise empty bus.
"There isn't time,"
Wayne said. He drove off.
"There's a bag for each of you."
Finn's name was written on one of 5 grocery bags. Inside was a costume.
"Put it on,"
Wayne instructed.
"Ladies, to the back."
Some blankets had been strung across the rear seats to provide the girls privacy.
"Gentlemen, up front."
Wayne turned the bus at the next corner, and the boys, all in various degrees of undress, had to hold on to keep their balance. Wayne picked up the microphone and announced so the girls could hear as well.
"I'll bring you in around the back of the park at Frontierland. You'll enter the tunnels from there."
"Tunnels?" Finn asked.
"After that, it's up to the 5 of you, I'm afraid."
When the boys were dressed, Charlene and Willa came forward. Willa wore an old-fashioned blue-striped dress and a puffy-sleeved blouse printed with pastel flowers, the uniform of food service workers in Frontierland. Charlene wore a skirt and top of a deckhand on the paddle-wheel steamboat that circled Tom Sawyer Island.
"Listen, all of you. There's a schedule in place we must keep in order for this to work."
Wayne was one of the worst drivers Finn had ever met. The bus nearly sideswiped 2 cars, then veered left and scraped its wheels against the curb before smashing back down to the roadway.
"Okay, we're listening,"
Finn said, realizing that the old goat was agitated. Philby was dressed as a boatman on the Jungle Cruise. Finn was a newspaper boy from Main Street. Maybeck wore a turban-topped outfit from the magic carpets of Aladdin. Wayne pulled the bus over and threw open the door. Amanda boarded.
"She is necessary to our plans,"
Wayne announced. Amanda looked Finn in the eye and then, without saying anything, took a seat in the middle of the bus. Wayne explained.
"Amanda has the run of the place. She's not on the DHI watch list. She'll act as sentry and guide when you need her."
Now inside the Magic Kingdom, Wayne slowed the bus next to a large white building that, according to its sign, had something to do with waste disposal. A wide metal tube, connected to the building, extended out from an earthen bank. A paved road led up the rise to a very large double gate in the wooden wall. Flowers and shrubs covered a small hill that bordered a tall wooden fence, which was behind Frontierland. Wayne spun to face them, still behind the wheel. He nervously checked his wristwatch.
"You'll wear these ID tags around your necks at all time, but turn them so they face in, so the ID picture doesn't show."
Wayne had borrowed some ID tags for them.
"What's this building?" Maybeck asked.
Dressed as Ali Baba, or whoever he was, Finn thought he looked pretty cool. Wayne answered.
"This is important to you, Finn. Have you ever seen a garbage bag being carried around inside the park?"
Wayne asked. All 5 shook their heads.
"This building is why. All the park's trash travels underground through a series of steel tubes. Those tubes terminate here, where the trash is compacted, and then shipped off to a dump. The process is automated. I briefed Amanda."
She remained in the back, silent and studious. Briefed Amanda about the trash, Finn wondered. He kept his mouth shut.
"Once I get you inside," Wayne instructed, "you're on your own. The utilidor here, that's what the park tunnels are called, is complicated and big. The corridors are more like underground roads than sidewalks. There are golf carts and electric buggies down there, so keep alert and don't get hit. Cast members know the utilidor well, and you're cast members now. You'll need to look comfortable."
"What about Maleficent?" Finn asked. "The plans?"
"Terrence,"
Wayne said to Maybeck.
"What's likely the coldest room in an office building?"
"The computer room," Maybeck answered. "The service center."
"So where's the safest, most comfortable place for someone who likes the cold to spend time?"
"A refrigerator?"
Charlene answered, not paying enough attention.
"One possibility, yes. And one that you and Willow will pursue. There's an entire section of the utilidor devoted to cold food storage."
"The computer center,"
Maybeck said, answering Wayne's question.
"The servers are housed at the back of what we call the control room. That's for you and the boys,"
Wayne warned them.
"Stay alert for a sudden drop in temperature. That's what you're looking for. The missing plans won't be far away. We need those plans."
Wayne looked troubled and concerned.
"The point is, from what Finn described, he wounded Maleficent, weakened her. He also made it impossible for her to remain below Pirates of the Caribbean. I believe she's taken to the utilidor, where, looking like a cast member, no one would question or detain her. Your job is to get those plans from her, and to flush her out, to draw her out. We will handle the rest.
We? Philby asked.
You leave that to me, young man.
He looked between all six kids, for now Amanda was standing just behind Finn.
Are you ready?
A moment of hesitation settled over the kids, and one by one they nodded, even Charlene. Wayne's face brightened again.
Once you've got the plans and your topside, he said, that's when the chase begins. I'm afraid you may literally need to run for your lives. Maleficent is not likely to be a good loser. Finn takes the plans. Amanda will guide him back here.
Again, Wayne took a moment to make eye contact with each of the kids. He ended with Finn.
You'll do exactly as she says.
Finn glanced back at Amanda. He didn't feel good about this. She revealed nothing of what she might be thinking. Finn felt there was an unusually strong bond between Wayne and Amanda. Were they related somehow? Without question, Finn thought, Amanda was no ordinary girl. Wayne threw the bus door open, and the kids hurried out. 32. Inside the Magic Kingdom, the sun shone brightly. Finn's costume warmed up. He thought the air smelled like Thanksgiving. It took him a minute to spot the turkey leg being gnawed on by a big man wearing a Hard Rock Cafe shirt. The six kids and Wayne passed into the park through a high wooden fence, with Thunder Mountain to their right. Past the ride and through another door marked for cast members, they entered a room with dull green walls. They saw an elevator door, scratched and in need of paint, with a single arrow pointing down. A large sign bolted to the cinder block wall above the adjacent set of descending stairs cautioned, "Cast members only, please."
I'll go first, Wayne announced. Girls, you'll follow me to food service. Terrence, you know what you're looking for. Good luck, everyone.
Finn felt his throat catch. There was only one reason Wayne could be doing this so soon on the heels of the previous night. It isn't safe. They had to accomplish this before Maleficent regained all her powers, though Finn wondered what would become of them if she already had. Wayne's white head bobbed down the stairs, followed closely by Charlene and then Willa. The boys heard a heavy door open and close. Then silence. Finn's throat was bone dry. His palms were sweating. Maybeck went first. He descended the stairs, suddenly consumed by shadow. Again the sound of the door opening and falling shut. That door swallowed his friends. He hoped he'd see them again. Philby went next. Finn then worked his way down, and hand on the door, reminded himself to stay calm. He tugged on the door and opened it to a strange, unfamiliar world. They found themselves in a tunnel that ran a great distance in both directions. People in Disney costumes walked in groups while battery-operated vehicles plied the corridors. The utilidor was physically much wider, much bigger, enormous, really, than Finn had imagined it would be. An underground road of sorts with doors leading from it. Actors dressed as non-human animated Disney characters like Mickey and Minnie and Donald Duck paraded past, each wearing or carrying a mask large enough to cover their whole head. There were others dressed as human characters, wearing makeup, but without masks. Belle and Snow White, Peter Pan and Mulan. The walk-arounds, they were called. A small electric truck zoomed past, stacked high with cans of soda and bottled water. Finn looked to see Charlene and Willa headed in the same direction the truck was going. He followed a short distance behind Philby, who in turn followed Maybeck. The boys were now moving in the opposite direction from the girls. Overhead, along the tunnel ceiling, thick cables and pipes hung. No Disney music played down here. Instead, the boys heard only the whine of the vehicles, the steady whoosh of piped-in air, and the gentle murmur of voices. Finn passed a girl with Cinderella's hair and face, but she wore blue jeans and a tank top, not yet in costume. The boys walked briskly for well over 5 minutes before finally coming to another tunnel. Maybeck followed the signs as Wayne had told them. This new tunnel gradually sloped downward, leveled out, and ran another 50 yards before climbing again. Then it dead-ended at yet another busy tunnel. Finn followed to the right, Philby and Maybeck just ahead. Offices and unidentified rooms lined the route. It was extremely busy down here, with people coming and going like worker bees. Finn caught a glimpse of a cafeteria. He passed signs for the property room, a barber shop, and a woman's hair salon. A city! The tunnel veered left. Philby and Maybeck slowed and pretended to read from a bulletin board. It's just up ahead,
Maybeck said in a low voice. The timing is critical, because there's a coffee break coming up. Wayne thinks our best shot at getting in there is during the coffee break. Finn took a sip from a water fountain, stealing a look down the hall. They waited. A few minutes later, three workers, two men and a woman, left the door marked control room. The boys approached the door and entered. Inside, they faced row after row of steel shelving, like bookshelves in a library, floor to ceiling. Instead of books, the shelves were filled with thousands of tiny blinking lights, red, yellow, and orange, rack-mounted computers. It was chilly in here. Maybeck hurried down the second-to-last row, saying softly, Wayne's point is that no one will notice Maleficent's cold aura in a cold place like this. He said the servers are in a back room. Sure enough, they soon stood facing several steel doors, all unmarked. Finn stepped forward and touched the back of his hand to each door in succession. The middle door was noticeably colder. Finn wondered for how many years, how many decades, Maleficent had been confined to the various tunnels and lairs beneath the Magic Kingdom. It seemed no wonder she'd turned to the dark side of her powers.
How do we do this? Maybeck asked, now that he'd led them here.
I don't think we knock, Philby said. Actually, maybe we do, Finn said, surprising the other two. He thought for a minute and said, Have either of you ever run track?
Maybeck nodded.
How about the relay?
Finn asked. Maybeck nodded again.
Drivers, start your engines, Finn said.
He pulled the boys into a three-way huddle and told them his plan.
Knock, knock, Finn said loudly. It's your favorite Disney host interactive, he announced.
He kept one eye on the wall clock. The coffee break was scheduled to last 15 minutes. 6 of those minutes were behind them. No answer. 7 minutes gone. 8 minutes remaining.
I've come to offer you a deal.
Spines of ice crept up the edges of the closed door. Finn could picture the witch standing just on the other side. His knees felt weak, but he had to go through with this. He raised his voice.
We're through. We're done. Wayne, he's an old guy who sent us here to steal something from you. But we've had a change of heart. We want to destroy the server, the computer that generates our DHIs. We don't want to do this anymore.
Still nothing, though the ice on the door thickened.
We don't know which server it is. We don't know what to do. You help us without hurting us, and we'll give you the pens.
The doorknob went white with frost. She was holding it from the other side.
You're thinking this is a trap, Finn said. And you're right to think that, but it isn't. We just want to go home. We want to sleep at night. Please, help us, and you'll have what you want.
The doorknob turned. Maleficent stood in the doorway. She had not fully recovered from Finn zapping her the night before. She looked older, slightly yellow in the cheeks. Behind her, on a stack of more computers, Finn saw the scroll of plans she had stolen from him at One Man's Dream. Finn and Maybeck backed up a step. Philby was nowhere to be seen.
Which server?
Finn asked.
And we need whatever backup server they have as well, Maybeck said. Once we're gone, we don't want them able to bring us back.
Maleficent glared at them with her eyelids lowered menacingly. She was either half dead or ready to kill.
I'm sorry for what I did, Finn said. I didn't know.
Finn realized he'd zapped a good deal of the power from her. He'd drained her. She was like a battery running out of juice. She said nothing, just stood there blinking, looking devilish. She gathered her strength and said,
Jez likes you, or I would have hurt you last night when I had the chance.
That's comforting to know, Finn said. I'll put down the pens. You can have it. But first, you'll show us the right server.
First, the pens, she said. You think I'd trust you like that?
And why should I trust you?
This is your idea, not mine. Besides, once I have the pen, what threat are you?
Finn concealed his smirk as he shrugged.
Have it your way, he said.
He withdrew the group of pens and pencils from his pocket and placed them on the ground. Maleficent approached them like a kid nearing a Christmas tree. She seemed to have more energy. Her eyes flared open in expectation. Finn took several more steps backward, Maybeck right next to him. But behind Maleficent, the door to the back room swung slowly away from the wall, and there stood Philby. In his right hand, Philby clutched a fistful of pens and pencils tightly. Maleficent bent toward the pens on the floor, clearly cautious. But as she drew closer, she saw the modern brand names on the pens. Bic. Uniball. She looked up through fiery eyes.
"Now!"
Finn shouted. Philby charged from behind and did just as Finn had told him. Holding the pens extended, he drove his fist into the witch. At the same moment, she turned around. A blinding flash erupted as the pens made contact. Maleficent rose from the floor and was thrown violently past Finn and Maybeck and into the heavy black shelves. Maybeck sprinted forward into the back room, grabbed the roll of plans, and headed for the main door. Philby, stunned by what he'd done, passed the pens to Finn, leaving behind on the floor the pens the boys had collected from a desk at the front of the control room. Philby was next out the door.
"What's going on here?"
A big man blocked Finn's exit. Just then a shower of sparks and spurts of flame rose from where Maleficent lay pinned to the computer shelves, impaled onto a stack of electrical outlets and surge suppressors. As the electricity flowed through her body, beneath the smoke and spitting sparks, Finn saw her skin color return to a rich green. The electricity fed her.
"What is that?"
asked the office manager. Maleficent's bloodshot eyes flashed open and locked onto Finn. He'd never seen eyes so angry, so mean and vicious, so powerful. And they were aimed at him. Only at him. The office manager staggered toward a fire extinguisher hanging from the wall. Finn made for the door. Maleficent pulled herself loose from the metal shelving as a shower of sparks cascaded overhead and cried,
"Ah! I needed that!"
She flew out the door. Literally, the office manager fainted. 33. Finn hit the tunnel running. Behind him raced a blur of green and black as Maleficent sped through the air, her arm pointing in front of her and leading the way, closing the distance. The boys ran side by side now, Maleficent behind them and closing fast. Like a shell game, the boys passed the plans back and forth between them, then switched positions as they ran and passed the plans again. For someone behind them, where Maleficent now followed, it grew impossible to determine which boy had the plans. Then, just as Maleficent was nearly upon them, the boys split up, running in three different directions. Maybeck mumbled, perhaps a little too loudly for his own good.
"I've got them. Don't worry. Just run."
Finn took an exit door to his left. He raced up the stairs at a furious speed, glancing behind. No Maleficent. She'd followed Maybeck. Finn broke into blinding daylight. He checked the tube of papers tucked into his waist, thrilled the plan had worked. Fresh air. Park music. For a moment, Finn couldn't figure out where he was. A cast member door led out into Tomorrowland. That was wrong. He was out of position. Finn fled through the door and out onto a busy concourse. At midday, the area bustled with activity, a steady stream of guests in a chaotic mass of t-shirts, shorts, and the sweet smell of suntan lotion. How long would it take for Maleficent to discover their trickery? The plan had been to rendezvous with Amanda on the bridge between Tomorrowland and the Central Plaza. But which way? Finn had left the Utilidor via the wrong exit. He heard the crowd scream to his right. He was familiar with all sorts of sounds in the Magic Kingdom, but this particular roar sounded out of place. A second later, Maybeck came out of the same cast member's only door. He was out of breath and sweating.
"She's after Philby,"
he told Finn. Another scream broke from the distance. Some little kid shouted,
"Aladdin! Aladdin!"
and cut through the thick crowds to reach Maybeck, who they mistook for the character. Maybeck tried to get away from them. Parents called after their kids to be polite. A line formed behind Maybeck as he and Finn set out walking. Maybeck said under his breath,
"You should have lost a wardrobe."
"I don't know," Finn said. "Maybe we can use this." He handed Maybeck one of the pens.
"You're kidding me!"
The children caught up and surrounded them both, their autograph notebooks out and ready.
"Sign some autographs, Aladdin," Finn said encouragingly.
With clenched teeth, Maybeck asked in a whisper,
"How do you spell Aladdin?"
Finn spelled it for him as yet another excited scream pealed from the crowd, this time much closer. A sea of park guests parted to his right, a green witch, Maleficent. She walked quickly and deliberately and was just scary enough looking to hold her admirers at bay.
"Head down," Finn called out.
Maybeck ducked, continuing to scribble out autographs furiously. The green-faced witch and her following sea of fans passed them by. Finn backed away from the clot of eager children.
"That's all,"
Finn said, though to little effect. Maybeck was suddenly hooked on this autograph writing. He made no attempt to stop.
"Aladdin!" Philby called out. "You're going to be late!"
Maybeck finally gave it up. He made his apologies, and he and Finn moved on. The crowd up ahead, the group following Maleficent, stopped, colliding into one another. This, because the witch had stopped and turned. But why? Finn moved in the other direction. He came face to face with Jez.
"Give us the pen and the plans, and we won't hurt you,"
she said. Several things happened at once. First, Finn spotted a group of four or five seagulls clustered atop a high white fence. Then he saw Amanda. She stood inside the same white fence, the gulls perched overhead. She signaled Finn to join her. Third, Jez reached for the plans and stole them from him.
"Go!"
Finn ordered Maybeck. And there was Philby standing next to Amanda, also beckoning them over to the fence. Finn dove at Jez, knocked her down, and took the plans back. She sat up on the pavement, mumbling something, and cast a spell at Finn. He felt a sharp pain flood through him. His knees went weak. That dreaded sense of cold overcame him. Jez smiled at her success, got to her feet, and stepped toward him. Finn fought against the spell by thinking of himself as pure light, as a DHI, even though he was just Finn Whitman, the boy. He allowed her no power over him, refused to give in to her. As he did, something strange happened. His fingers tingled. A woman in the crowd gasped.
"Oh my gosh, look who it is!"
Finn was crossing over, becoming his DHI. He mentally pushed against Jez. The harder he pushed, the more of his body turned into light. A hologram. The next spell she tried to cast passed right through him and turned a small tree just behind him to solid ice. The crowd applauded and cheered, children shouting,
"More! More!"
Jez lunged at Finn, but she, too, passed right through him. Again the crowd cheered. She dared to try again. This time, Finn stepped into her and stopped. He moved with her in perfect lockstep, able somehow to know her every thought. She spun in circles, trying to rid herself of him. They were a single entity now, spinning and glowing. Two kids in one. The crowd went wild. Finn resisted the cold. He felt warmth replace it. He heard her calling out,
"Your Grace!"
She sounded desperate and afraid. The crowd roared their approval, a spinning vortex of light, and the girl's wild cries for help. Finn stepped away from her, and Jez spun to a stop, dazed. She raised her head slowly while studying her hands, her arms, touching her forearms, as if they didn't belong to her.
"I can't believe it."
As her eyes met Finn's, she cried out,
"I'm free!"
"Free from what?" Finn wondered.
"You did it,"
Jez said to Finn, her eyes bright, her voice excited.
"No more cold! No more Maleficent! You freed me!"
With that, the most startling thing happened. Jez changed. She transformed before Finn's eyes. The crowd applauded as her hair changed color from jet black to a sandy blonde. Her eyebrows and eyelashes became lighter as well, and a few freckles appeared on her cheeks. She was, without question, a different girl. A beautiful girl. And yet, familiar. Finn couldn't get over the feeling that he'd met her before, that he knew her, this new girl. And then, as he glanced back to his friends and saw Amanda there calling for him, a spike of astonishment filled him, and he felt the DHI dissolve and the real Finn return. Amanda's face filled with light, with an expression of joy Finn had never seen. Tears filled her eyes. Finn looked back and forth between the two girls, Jez and Amanda, and it couldn't be. But it was. They were sisters. Twins, perhaps, not identical, but close to it. Only then did he understand Amanda's efforts, her never giving up. Only then did he come to wonder if Amanda wasn't some kind of witch herself. A good witch. The crowd exploded into celebration. Maleficent's green form streaked toward them. As Finn, a boy again, reached the fence, he faced Amanda.
"Why didn't you tell me?"
"You weren't ready,"
she said. Amanda stood in front of a large yellow cylinder sticking out of the ground, with a thick, circular steel trapdoor on top. A number of warning posters instructed proper use.
"The others went ahead,"
Amanda said.
"Go!"
Finn looked down.
"But it's a trash chute."
"Go! Feet first!"
She opened it.
"Quickly! Jump!"
She seemed distracted. Finn followed her line of sight. Maleficent had caught up to Jez. But Jez held her hands in front of her, and try as Maleficent might, she could not get close to the girl. Raging with anger, Maleficent suddenly saw Finn. Finn asked Amanda,
"Is Jez who I think she is?"
Jez, not anymore. How can we ever thank you?"
The tears spilled from her eyes.
"We couldn't break the spell ourselves."
"Then she is... then you are..."
Finn's head swam, but he stopped himself as Maleficent raised her hand to cast a spell. Seeing this, Finn jumped down the trash chute. From high overhead, he heard Amanda's gleeful voice echo as he fell.
"I'll never forget what you did!"
As he was sucked down the foul-smelling tube, Finn tucked the roll of plans away under his belt. He took a deep breath and gagged. He thought he might throw up. The tube reeked of rotting trash. Gooey bits and sticky globs of rancid food and soggy litter stuck to him like leeches, licked his face, and slopped into his hair and clothing. Again, he felt himself gag. In the distance, far down the tube, echoing through the metal, Finn heard hoots and hollers, Maybeck and Philby. The suction spit trash into his face. He slammed into some kind of mesh gate, an intersection of converging trash evacuation tubes. On the other side, black garbage bags and trash raced past. Then the gate opened, and it was his turn. He tumbled down and rolled into the next tube, picked up speed and headed off again, upside down and backwards. Wind roared all around him. A garbage bag smashed into him. It broke open, its trash freed. Awful stuff raced around him and stuck to him. He braced himself just in time for another intersection, but this gate was open, and he moved into a third, larger tube. Aluminum cans peppered his head. Cellophane and cotton candy stuck to him. Diapers, orange peels, sticky popsicle sticks. He somersaulted to avoid this stuff, and there, behind him, came a dull green light. It grew ever larger. It moved quickly. He was thrown into a back somersault. As he came around, he found himself facing Maleficent. Arms at her side, head forward, legs outstretched behind her, she flew effortlessly through the garbage tube, apparently unaffected by the suction.
"Miss me?"
she wheezed. She lunged. Her ice-cold hand grabbed for the scroll. Finn kicked out and pushed her back. Her wide eyes narrowed in hatred. She lunged again. Finn straightened himself out and gained speed. He briefly pulled away from her. Through the roar, he heard her mumble,
"Anima transformator."
Finn ducked as she flicked her wrist at him. A sandwich bag next to him melted and reformed into a rat. That spell had been meant for him. At once, the rat came alive, its tail swiping, its little feet clawing for purchase. Maleficent closed the gap. Finn tore a hole in a garbage bag, scattering its contents. He heard a clank of metal not far ahead. Yet another gate. The rat scrambled and scratched at Finn. If he and Maleficent crashed into a gate together, she would have him and the plans. He felt certain of it. She wound up to deliver yet another spell, the two of them racing through the slimy tube. Finn grabbed hold of the clawing rat and threw it at her. Maleficent fought off the rat and came right for Finn. He saw a small white circle grow larger and wider. The end of the tunnel. Finn could smell fresh air. Trying to buy himself time, he shouted at her,
"You forgot something! Evil never wins in the Magic Kingdom!"
She called back,
"That depends on whose magic it is!"
Propelled out the end of the trash tube, Finn flew through the air and crashed into a sea of trash bags and an enormous steel collection box, like a railroad car. He scrambled toward the edge, where he saw Wayne and others, men and women, surrounding the huge collection bin.
"Hurry!"
Wayne shouted. Finn reached for the edge, pulled himself up and over, and fell to the ground, splatting, soaking wet with trash. There he saw Philby and Maybeck, also covered in goo. He watched as Maleficent shot out the end of the trash tube and into the giant container. The team of adults quickly produced a net, dragging it from one end to the other and trapping her inside.
"To the bus! Quickly!"
Wayne hollered, moving in that direction himself. The other adults worked furiously to secure the net. As Finn ran, he heard Maleficent's wails of complaint from the bin. Maybeck, Philby, and Finn caught up to Wayne, the old guy limping along. Finn shouted,
"You're not going to..."
"No,"
Wayne replied.
"We don't kill anything here, not even witches. We'll give her a taste of her own jail, the one you found, for a while. It'll give us time to determine how much power the Overtakers have gained. You've done well. We're almost through."
"Almost?"
shouted all three boys, coming to a stop at once. They all boarded the bus. Finn handed him the plans and the pens. Wayne looked back gratefully and said,
"Good job, kids."
34. Looking out the window of the castle apartment, having crossed over just before 10 o'clock, Finn thought the park looked beautiful. He wondered if he'd ever know the truth about Amanda, if he'd ever see her again, for she'd been noticeably absent from school that Monday. He thought about Maleficent saying that there were overtakers far more powerful than she was, and he wondered if more adventures lay in store for him and his new friends. Willa was the last to cross over. She appeared in the room wearing a cotton nightgown that flowed to her ankles. To explain this, she said,
"My mom put me to bed. Nothing much I could do about it."
Finn looked around at each of his new friends. He liked them all, though each for a different reason. He unrolled the faded blueprints of the park. They examined them, fascinated to see how the park had started out. Wayne explained what they were looking at. From the group of pens and pencils on the coffee table, Wayne selected a boring-looking black one. It was fat and bulged, a very old fountain pen. Wayne put on a pair of sunglasses. He passed out sunglasses to all the kids, too, and told them to put them on as well.
"Now," Wayne said, "we finally put the two together."
"How will we know if it's right?" Finn asked.
Wayne's aged face twisted into a smile.
"Believe me, we'll know."
Wayne contemplated the pen, then passed it to Finn.
"This is for you, I think."
He indicated a small metal lever on the end of the pen. Finn picked up the pen, carefully unscrewed the cap, and hooked the small lever with his fingernail. He looked up at each of the others, their expectant eyes filled with curiosity and excitement.
"Hold it up high,"
Wayne instructed. Finn did so, and pulled on the lever. A single drop of dark ink splashed down onto the plans. Finn, Wayne, and all the kids jumped back. The drop of ink settled, then expanded, and bled out into each and every faded line drawn onto the plans. It raced from one to another, spreading faster and faster. Faint lines became solid and bold. The detailed plans transformed, one page after another. Some of what Finn saw was familiar, an area of Frontierland, a piece of Liberty Square. But much of this was foreign to him, parts of a park he'd never before seen.
"Come look,"
Wayne said, now standing by the small window. He tore the theatrical gel from the window. The kids joined him, squeezing together. Below, the dark park filled with light, following the same pattern that the ink flowed through the plans. Light rushed up lanes and streets, jumped over benches and engorged trees. Attractions came alive, first on the outer edge of the Magic Kingdom, but steadily rushing toward the castle. Faster and faster the light traveled through the park, brighter and brighter. It arrived at the castle from all directions, a brilliant white light racing up the walls. The kids jumped back, blinded. The sky erupted with fireworks, throwing blazing color and light into the heavens, deafening explosions and blinding colors. The local newspapers would report the next day that a private party at the Magic Kingdom had been responsible for the most amazing show of fireworks the park had ever seen. But Finn and the other DHIs would know differently. With the sky still erupting outside, Wayne walked over to Finn and extended a hand of thanks. They shook hands. The kids cheered and formed a huddle. As they spun in celebration, Wayne returned to the coffee table. There, he picked up the black remote and pushed the button.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Kingdom Keepers by Ridley Pearson. Copyright 2005, page 1, Incorporated. Read by Gary Littman. Directed by Ruth Bloomquist. Engineered by Corey Young. Performance copyright 2005, Brilliance Audio. Published by arrangement with Disney Editions. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.